Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Bennington, Vermont. This talk, delivered on Sunday, June 14th, 2026, is by the Reverend Barbara Threet on the topic of I Need a Map.
I should perhaps warn you that one of the blessings for me, and maybe a blessing for you, about my going on vacation and then study leave is that I read a whole lot of books, and often they inspire what I'm going to do the next year. There's one that I read last summer called Radical Cartography. And I've forgotten the name of the author, but it was an amazing book, and it's inspired this sermon. Maps. Each of us makes and uses maps on a daily basis. If you lived in this area for a while, you probably know several alternate routes in case the road is blocked. You have a road map in your head. You probably have a mental map of where the produce section is in your favorite supermarket, or where you find the coffee. And if the store is suddenly rearranged, it's disconcerting because you rely on that internal map. There are maps that aren't so physical either. More than once, I've heard someone say something like, "This isn't how it was supposed to be." My wife and I had it all mapped out. We'd retire and travel, visit our grandkids and see places we've always wanted to see. And then she broke her back and she's stuck in a wheelchair. And I have heart disease. And everything that we had planned is out the window. I don't know how this happened. Each of us has a life map. I think we probably inherit them when we're about 2 weeks old. It says something like kindergarten, learning to ride a bike, falling in love, college, job, marriage, kids, a house, aging parents, retirement. You kind of know what the map will be, and you may or may not follow it. I don't remember divorce being in my map as a child at all, but it came in there. But those maps are helpful. They give us some sense of what life will be. We each use maps every day. We rely on them, even without thinking about them. They help us to organize information. They're useful guides for navigating places and data. And they make planning life a whole lot easier. And maps are everywhere in an amazing array of forms. GPS on our phones has largely replaced the paper maps that used to litter our cars, but they're still maps. A chart of the muscles at the doctor's office is a map of your body. And maps aren't just flat pieces of paper. The knowledge that allowed you to get from your house to the meeting house this morning is a mental map. An org chart that helps you navigate a business, or this one that shows you how our committees are organized. The Dewey Decimal System that organizes a library. The script of a play that provides directions. A star chart. All of these are maps of some kind, guides that help us organize information. They can be useful or misleading, trustworthy or confusing, persuasive or clarifying. They can even be intentionally obscuring things. Maps always have a person, sometimes obvious and sometimes not. At their most basic, maps are simply tools to organize data, ways to put some facts or objects in relationship to other facts or objects. And they create perceptions, whether those are accurate or not. Think about the map that was probably on the wall when you were in grade school, when Greenland was massive and shaped kind of like this. Greenland looks often in Mercator projections like it's at least the size of Africa, with that huge, strange anvil shape at the top. That depiction of Greenland, of course, is because of the inevitable distortion that happens when you're trying to portray a round world on a flat surface using a square grid. It doesn't work. Greenland is big. It's 836,000 square miles. But it's actually roughly oval-shaped, slightly bigger at the top, and only 650 miles across at the widest point. It's actually just a little bit bigger than the country of Saudi Arabia, not massive at all. And the size of the continent of Africa is 11.7 million square miles. Africa is over 14 times as big as Greenland, despite what the map indicates. The map that was on my grade school walls was not intentionally lying, but it was certainly misleading. Maps can manipulate our thinking, intentionally or not, and whether we're aware of it or not. Maps can be completely misleading at times. On most maps of the U.S., You've got the U.S. sitting here, and then Hawaii and Alaska, kind of floating like islands somewhere below the continental United States, which has nothing to do with geography, but a lot to do with fitting the U.S. on one rectangular piece of paper. More than one child, and probably more than one adult, has been stunned to learn that Hawaii is actually as far west of California as New York is from the east, and not a little island down here at all. And on many maps of the U.S., Canada and Mexico have completely disappeared. One could assume that the U is an island, rather like Australia. Maps can appear to confirm widely disparate facts, depending on what data is used and how it's handled. As an illustration, we'll look at the UUA's administrative regions. And I hope I get all the right papers at the right time. We are currently broken into five different geographical regions: Pacific Western, Mid-America, Southern, Central East, and New England. Five regions. That's a fairly new process. Don't get me started. If we were to look at the U.S. in terms of the number of congregations in our various districts, green on this map is for 150 to 200 congregations, and blue is for those with 201 to 250. Not surprisingly, New England has actually 238 or thereabouts. It's where Unitarianism started. It's not surprising that there's a lot there. There's quite a few in California. There's 143 just in California. Oh, and the Pacific District also includes Alaska and Hawaii. There are just around 200 in Mid-Atlantic. It goes back and forth. There are new congregations and congregations that combine and those that close. And there are a little under 200 in Central, East, and Southern. But it looks like we're more or less the same size. All of our congregations are between about 170 and about 230 members. It looks fairly equal. But then we look at this map. This one is looking at the total number of Unitarian Universalist members in each of the denomination. Less than 30,000, just Mid-Atlantic. They're around 28,000 total. They have several states here that have very few UU congregations. Pacific and South and Central East have around 31, 32, 34,000 members. There are some very, very tiny congregations in the South, as you might imagine. There are, I think, four congregations total in the state of Mississippi. And then we have yellow and green, which is 90 to 120, and there's nobody. And blue, which is 120 to 150, and there's nobody. And then New England, which is 150 plus thousand, 152,000 or so last time I looked. Quite a disparity between these states and this one. All of these are taken from real data. All of them could be used for very disparate purposes. If you're a member of the district region state, I keep saying districts, regions, and you would really like to have more people on your staff, you could go to the UUA and you could say, look how huge this is. We've got all this area. We've got the states of Alaska and Hawaii. We really need more for our travel budget. We've got a huge district. And that might be a legitimate thing to raise. Or you could be somebody from tiny little New England and go and say, we are five times the membership of anybody else. We need more staff. We need more program people. And that might be a legitimate interpretation, given this map. Different maps will lead you to different places, can be used for very different purposes. Maps are never neutral. They can literally create reality, or they can wipe out reality, or at least try to. Consider the Kurds, an ethnic group of some 25 to 30 million people who live in Kurdistan. No, wait, there is no such place as Kurdistan. There actually never was. But there was and still is a widely recognized Kurdish region in the Middle East and into Western Asia. People who identify as Kurds are now spread among Armenia, Turkey, Syria, Iraq, and Iran. Our map tells us, confirms, insists that there is no such place as Kurdistan, although people of Kurdish descent beg to differ. The map suggests, and many politicians insist, that those people should drop all of that "I'm Kurdish" foolishness and just learn to be Turks or Syrians or Iraqis. The map of that region says there is no place for Kurds. Maps can minimize or even erase inconvenient data, and that happens painfully often. And we are probably all aware of places in our world where drawing a certain border has become a major political problem. A great example of border problems arose in Canada a few decades ago. In 1973, the Canadian Supreme Court decreed that the government should negotiate a financial settlement with Aboriginal tribes to compensate for their loss of their traditional use and occupancy. The challenge the government faced was figuring out how to document the claim, who was on what land. The process began by having Inuit men document everywhere that they had traveled or hunted on what they considered to be traditional lands. The survey was not meant to be controversial or subversive, just factual, informational, based on the experiences and recollections of the tribal people. But something very surprising emerged. The tribal land wasn't all land. The people traditionally hunted seals and polar bears and whales and fished, and much of their hunting was in the sea, either on the ice during the winter or in some form of boat. The final document showed that their tribal use included around 750 square miles of land, plus about 325 square miles of sea, offshore. The usual land-water border wasn't part of Inuit culture at all, despite what the map of Canada said. The Canadian government had to change to its entire Indigenous claims policy to include offshore usage. When the claim was finally settled in the early 1990s, most of the borders were offshore, some by many miles. This actually has affected our country because since those borders are now offshore, that has infringed on how the U.S. can use some of those waters. The process of mapping changed how the indigenous people saw themselves and their territory, and it changed how the government defined tribal territory as well. That map was created for a very specific purpose, and it was much different than what they initially intended. It revealed much more than had been anticipated. But all maps have underlying assumptions, which we often miss completely, especially the assumptions that we're very used to seeing. Think about that map that probably hung on the wall in your grade school classroom. You can probably picture it. What countries are on the top of that map? Does it matter that Europe and North America are routinely at the top of the map? How might it feel to you if you were an American and you had always seen South Africa and Argentina, Australia and the Falkland Islands at the top of the map? What parts of the world are usually prominent, and what parts are usually off to the sides, even almost omitted? Antarctica is generally a bunch of scattered irregularities along the bottom of the page, if it's there at all. In reality, Antarctica contains about 5.5 million square miles, and there are maps that put Antarctica at the center. I find them completely disconcerting. Continental U.S. is only a little over 3 million miles. We get lots of play. Antarctica is half again as big, and it's often barely shown at all. And the map that we most often see at our walls clearly separates the world into east and west. You probably have the U.S. going out here, and there's Alaska and a little bitty place. And way over here is Russia and a little bitty place. They are completely, totally separate. They're actually left less than 55 miles apart. But our map says something about how we see the world and how we want to see the world. There have been many attempts to make maps that aren't quite so distorted, like, this one, for example. It does show Antarctica as being a little bit bigger. There's Africa in the middle, North America. Greenland still has a big, strange shape, but that's really hard to do when you're trying to make a flat paper out of something. This one's pretty widely used in textbooks. But until a few years ago, the one that was widely used was this one, which puts North America and Central America, or South America, clearly in the middle. And everything else is way off to the side. The one that's been commonly used in textbooks in Southeast Asia is this one, which is quite different. There's Australia, there's Southeast Asia, there's a little bit of other stuff over here called North America, and South America's way over here, but the center of the world is here. It's a very, very different picture. Quite a different view of the world, and with a different agenda. So how do we interpret information, given that our maps of any kind are inherently imperfect and incomplete? It helps to recognize that the borders and transitions that we assume in any part of our lives, physical or metaphorical, may not be accurate, may not be in sync with someone else's borders. They may not even exist at all. The Kurds don't have a shared country despite having a shared culture. And the Canadians had to discard the idea that a border is synonymous with the coast. The internal cultural map that says being an adult means living in your own home independently with your children gone may change with time and circumstance. Our life maps need updating, the same as our road maps do. Watch out for what's left off of your map, which may be important. Watch out for misrepresentations. Where's the nearly invisible but huge Antarctica in your lap? Is there a place where, like the Canadian government, you need to re-examine or adjust your borders? And consider who's gaining and who's losing with your map. Who's at the center? How is the data chosen? The number of UU congregations yields a very different picture from the one with the number of actual members. What biases and assumptions are being made in the maps that you use of any kind? What's being reinforced? What's being ignored? And what does all of this have to do with our congregation? Well, we use maps too, tools to help us organize data. This order of service, I have one here, which guides us through our congregation's Sunday morning worship services. Is a kind of a map. The diagrams on our walls that tell us how to evacuate the building in case of an emergency. The org chart that shows which board member collects information from which committees. And in case you're curious, the names of each board member, every month, they collect information from all of these groups. And it goes out to the board members, which helps us have a sense of what's going on in the congregation. There's a calendar on our website, which Bruce maintains, thank you, Bruce, and it helps us to organize our time and keep track of events. It tells us that there's a lecture here this coming Tuesday evening. It's entitled Shame, Sex, Attraction, Survivor Stories of Conversion Therapy. It tells us that on Wednesday afternoon, we'll host an AAUW meeting and an AA meeting that evening. On Saturday, July 11th, we'll hold a tag sale here, and on Sunday, July 12th, we'll have our annual picnic at the Lower Pavilion in Willow Park. You'll be reminded of that again. All of this information helps us to guide and organize our congregational life. We have words that help us do that, too. I would suggest that you pick up your order of service, and on the back, you'll find our mission statement. Something that defines and guides us in our congregational life serves as a kind of a map. Please read it with me. It starts with the mission of this Unitarian Universalist Fellowship is to create and nurture a cultural, ethical, and welcoming community which celebrates personal growth, diversity, and freedom of expression. And next you'll find our covenant, which states how we want to treat each other along the way. And we'll read that through together too. We, members of the Bennington, covenant to engage each other with our intellect, conscience, and compassion, affirm and promote the principles of the UUA and honor the sources of knowledge and wisdom, accept and respect each other and our community with all our varying beliefs, abilities, shortcomings, and needs, and support the fellowship by offering our time, energy, resources, creativity, and goodwill. And like any map, this is a statement of what we want to do and how we want to get there. And there may not always be as straightforward as we wish it was. We may even need to change some things over time. Our fellowship's org chart shows some things that are unique to us. For example, the Community Cafe or Bennington Cares. It also leaves out some things that some congregations have, we don't have or need, in my opinion, an aesthetics committee or an art show guild, but some churches do. When I was a member of the San Diego church, I was just dismayed, I suppose, to discover that there were over 60 committees. But with a congregation of 800 people, it made sense. If we were to shrink back, God forbid, to 40 members or grow to 400, this would have to change and adapt. 5 years ago, our reopening committee spent many, many hours considering how to reopen after COVID, how to map out congregational life so that it would be safe to be in person. Our chairs far apart, masks required, no coffee hour, an assortment of percussion instruments for making music when we didn't yet sing. How many of you remember the percussion instruments? They were under each of our chairs, and when it was time to make music, we picked them up and made rhythms. We literally changed the physical map, that, I never know what to call those, but that beautiful piece of furniture that Bill made that holds our hymnals used to be somewhere else, and I've forgotten where. But I remember the discussion to move it there so that it would create that entryway. Our guiding principles changed a bit, depending on many factors. And this is annual meeting Sunday. We'll be voting on a budget which maps out how we intend to spend our money in the coming year. We'll elect a new board member, which means we'll update the org chart. I'm looking at the new board member. We'll probably have some general discussion about our fellowship. To our great delight, we've had a recent influx of children. So next year, we're including money for a child care person in the budget. We're hoping to offer the middle school OWL program next year. OWL stands for Our Whole Lives. And it's the UUA's comprehensive, explicit, highly regarded, and carefully structured sexuality education program. I've taught OWL and its precursor About Your Sexuality many times, and I was one of two of the UUA's teacher trainers in the Pacific Southwest and Pacific Central for many years. We're including the space and time and financial resources for OWL in our plan for next year. The UUA only makes OWL materials available to teachers who have been specifically trained in its use. So we're including money to send our prospective OWL teachers to that training. And having led many of them, I can tell you it's a very intense and instructive long weekend. Our congregational plan for next year, our map, includes some other changes too. We've decided not to continue the warming place since usage was low. We've agreed to host a weekly rehearsal of the rock music choir on Thursday evenings. And we'll continue our involvement with the community cafe. Next year includes regular Sunday services and the social justice book group, the elders group, quite possibly an evening adult education class on Zoom, and many other activities. Many of them will be very familiar. Some may be new, some may be different. All of us together create the map of our coming year. And our annual meeting is a crucial part of that process. It will start shortly after the end of this service, so please stay around for it. Only members can vote, of course, but all ideas and opinions are welcome. The maps of our lives, whether they're on paper, in our head, or in any other form, are often useful, sometimes confusing, sometimes inadequate, sometimes even contradictory and never perfect. They inform how we think and what we expect, what we prioritize, and even what we believe we know. That great philosopher and reluctant explorer, Bilbo Baggins, says as he leaves the Shire, The road goes ever on and on, down from the door where it began. Now far ahead the road has gone, and I must follow if I can, pursuing it with eager feet until it joins some larger way, where many paths and errands meet. And whither then, I cannot say. Bilbo needed a map. Bilbo had Gandalf. We don't. So we need maps and guides, charts, ways to organize information to help us navigate and plan. May we make good maps, evaluate them carefully, and use them wisely. Amen.